DW Africa Link.
To ride a yellow colored taxi or a blue and white colored taxi. That is currently a dilemma in parts of Anglophone Cameroon. Locals are trapped between separatist orders and government restrictions. In some cases, separatists even burn taxis of drivers that do not follow their orders. So, what is this conflict about, and how does the escalation impact people in the Anglophone regions? That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Micah Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Taxi drivers in Cameroon's Anglophone regions are in limbo as separatists enforce a controversial taxi rule. It requires them to repaint their vehicles from the customary yellow to blue and white. These colors symbolize the Ambazonia separatist movement, which has been fighting for independence in the country's English-speaking regions since 2017. Let's jump straight into the issue of controversial taxi rules with my colleague Jean-Marie Ngonsong, DW correspondent in Cameroon. Hello, Jean-Marie.
Hello, Eddie. It's nice to be here with you.
Nice to have you on board. We're also joined by Barrister Agbo Bala, founder and president of the Center for Human Rights and Democracy in Africa, in Cameroon. He was one of the founders of the Civil Society Consortium when the crisis in Anglophone Cameroon started. Hello and welcome, sir.
Hi, Eddie. Nice to be connected with you.
Really nice to have you on board too. Mr. Bala, I'm going to start with you. It's been 8 years of the Anglophone crisis in Cameroon. Can you help us briefly understand what it is all about and why it's been going on for so long?
Yeah, 8 years of conflict, 8 years of struggle, 8 years of suffering, 8 years of no way out between the government and the separatists. The Anglophone crisis, if I want to talk about the Anglophone crisis, I would say the crisis is a crisis wherein Anglophones feel that they are not recognized in this country. They wanted a federal form of government, failure of the Human Accord, and the fact that lawyers and teachers in 2015 started clamoring for more rights. But there is an Amazonian crisis also, which is clamoring for independence. I always like to differentiate. There is an Anglophone crisis where a lot of Anglophones accept that there are fundamental changes that need to be done in the form of a state for them to feel part of the state. There is an Ambazonian crisis wherein Ambazonians or separatists have picked up arms and they want a separate state. Irrespective of what government does, they are not interested. They want to go back, they want to create a republic of Ambazonia. And we have, over time in history, we have had such clamors for secession, but it wasn't that strong. They only took advantage of the crisis that effectively started in late 2016. And because there was breakdown of law and order, the voices of those clamoring for separation and when they picked up arms only got heightened. And today we are having an Anglophone crisis that has engulfed the Southwest and the Northwest and the Ambazonian crisis or the Ambazonian conflict for those clamoring for separation.
Right. It's quite interesting, the breakdown that you've made for us, because as part of the separatist part of the crisis where some people have taken up arms, we are at a point, Jean-Marie, where we are now talking about controversial taxi rules by the separatist fighters. Tell us more about that. Where are we at with that? How did it all start?
Well, it started with separatist fighters, like the barrister rightly said, separatist fighters who are advocating for a breakaway state they intend to call Ambazonia. Now they have a flag that they have already designed with the colors blue and white. So in July, early July, they say that all taxis, especially in the Northwest Regional Capital, Bamenda, should remove the yellow color, the traditional yellow color that every taxi can be identified with, and paint the taxi with the color blue and white. Now, the government authorities here in the regional headquarters, Bamenda, also came out. The governor, the police boss, the army boss, and the gendarmerie boss, they had even session with taxi driver representatives, and they were warned that they cannot do that in Bamenda. Now, the separatists have resulted now in enforcing that law, which they say that it must go through by burning down taxis, either during activity or even when you are parked. So this is the situation that has engulfed especially the city of Bamenda for the past 2 months.
Yeah, and that's the challenge, Barrister, isn't it? Because when two elephants fight, they say it's the grass that suffers. Because what exactly are separatists trying to achieve with this so-called taxi policy?
If this is not unnecessary show of bravado, I don't really know what they intend to achieve, apart from some suffering the civilian population. Because clearly, the police or the military, the government controls the city centers where these taxis operate. You know, yes, the separatists can do a kind of hit and run, but at the end of the day, who suffers? There are these taxi drivers who are Anglophones, who some of them support the crisis or support the Anglophone conflict in a way that they should not be suffering. They should not be put in harm's way. These are policies which, to me, flies in the face of logic. That's why some of the leaders of the separatist movement have been against it. But because we don't have, or the separatists don't have, a unified leadership, everybody wants to show that they're in control. They come up at times with some decisions and some policies which is very unreasonable. Why do I say it's unreasonable? You know, how would these taxi drivers operate in the city? So if they have the blue and white, they are arrested by the state officials, not so? And if they have the yellow, the Ambazonians either kill them or kidnap them. And when these guys are arrested by the state officials, these guys who are clamoring for separation cannot release them. So you put the people in a difficult situation that it's not helpful. If you are a liberation movement, you have to protect the interests of the civilian population should be at the heart of what policy. I would say civilian-centric in whatever you are doing. You owe them this duty to protect them. But unfortunately, each passing day, it's more about their ego. It's more about who is in control, who wants to show to the ailing population that they are the ones who are pulling the shots without putting the interest of these same people that you want to protect, but prioritizing their interests. It's unfortunate. And I don't see it working, to be honest. It's one of those policies that, like the amber coin or like whatever that they've come, it would die a natural death. But before it dies a natural death, would have lost civilians, their lives and their property. And at the end of the day, history would ask us a question: what did we really think we were doing? Well, I mean, this the war of liberation could be prosecuted in a different way without putting the civilians in harm's way.
Yeah, Jean-Marie, it seems quite a complicated situation because as both of you have clearly pointed out, if you have now the yellow taxi in that region, you are going to face issues from the separatist fighters. But if you have the blue and white now, you are also now going to face challenges from the local government authorities.
Exactly.
So how is all of this impacting the daily life in the affected Anglophone region, Jean-Marie?
It's actually something that has instilled fear, suspicion, and there is this atmosphere of uneasy calm that has englobed, especially the Northwest Regional Capital, Bamenda. In a daily situation, you get up as early as 6 a.m. You are scared to leave your house. You have to make calls from the other end to know if it is safe, if taxis are circulating in that particular neighborhood. Because we have a situation where you get up from one angle of the town, you can board a taxi, and you move into a situation where separatists are attacking, or maybe they're burning down taxis at a particular location. So as a normal citizen in Bamenda, from morning to evening, you are on a security check. You are making calls before you move. You are sus- respecting every activity that goes on around you. You wait for people to come out. You are sure that everything is okay before you come out. And by 6 p.m., you have to be running home. And this has also forced many taxi drivers to move out of the regional capital, Bamenda, with their taxis. And the number of taxis in circulation have reduced, and the few ones that are braving the odds have to actually also step up the fee, they increase the fare. And when you want to argue, they tell you that they're even risking their taxis. And this is having a consequence on daily basic foodstuffs, because for farmers to transport their products to the market, the transportation cost has to increase. And at the end, it is the consumer that has to pay. So it is a spiral of suffering that is actually going on and on in Bamenda.
Right, right. I mean, as you clearly point out, it's a ripple effect, isn't it? One thing just affects so many other things, and it's the ordinary person that suffers. Barrister, you know, this is just one of the policies affecting the population in the Anglophone region, and always spearheaded, unfortunately, by the separatist leaders. What does this mean for where the conflict is or where it is heading? Has it morphed from separatist demands for independence to now attacks on civilians? Is that where we are?
What we face is more kind of what in international criminal law they would describe as terrorizing the civilian population, you know, because that's basically what is happening. The civilian population live in terror. And I see some of the policies that they do that goes against the liberation struggle, goes against the whole what some of the founding fathers of Ambazonia, you know, the Goji Dinkas who had been clamoring for Ambazonia. I don't think this is what they actually wanted, you know, wherein the population is being persecuted by liberators who are supposed to prosecute a war of liberation. So it's an attack against the civilian population, and I'm afraid that it makes a government that has been violating the rights of the Anglophones to be looked as good, as a better evil. That's my worry. We're in a position where people are considering as if the government is better. Why? Because of the way our people are treating the civilian population. No respect for them, disdain, arrogance, because they have the gun. They think that they are on top of the world. The way they talk to people, they kidnap, they rape, they ask for ransom. We cannot bury our relatives who are dead because now we have to pay money. That kind of mafia protection fee, that's what is going on. And then people are using it to settle their personal scores, you know. Land disputes are settled by them. They settle personal scores. Those who are economically viable automatically become a target. So they are not even encouraging people. And what is happening? People are now migrating, forced migration from the Northwest region and going to other places. Like what Jean Marie was saying, some of these taxi drivers or other economic operators, they are leaving and they are going to the Western region, to Littoral Center and the Southwest. So at the end of the day, we are not winning in both in conquering some of the territories or in terms of winning the hearts and minds of our people. I think for the last 3 or 4 years, the separatists have lost the minds and hearts of tremendously. I mean, not everybody, they'll always be hardcore, but they've lost tremendously a majority of the people who, when this crisis started, they were sympathetic with them, they were supportive of them. But now it seems as if also the lust for money, you know, for people to make whatever money they can make out of the situation, is the driving force for most of them.
Right, right. And it seems all these happenings is worsening the armed conflict in the Anglophone regions. Jean-Marie, when you talk to people on the ground as our correspondent, what are they saying and what do they want to happen now with all these challenges that they are facing?
people on the ground are tired of the whole situation, Eddie. People will want to get up one morning and hear the guns being silenced. People want to get up one morning and see the normalcy, returning to their daily activity. It would be an overstatement for people for me to say that people in Bamenda wish that one morning they will get up and hear that there is nothing like a separatist fighter or a call for cessation. Like Barrister Riley said, where at the onset of this crisis, people were hailing and think that freedom was coming soon. Even though people have been so stressed with the unitary system, at one moment they believe that the cessation will be a solution. At one moment, people wanted federation, but at the moment, I think that every statement on most lips in Bamenda wants to see normalcy returning at all costs. They don't care whether it comes by ballot. They don't care whether it comes by presidential decree or what. People just want life to return to normalcy and they go about their own life. And it is sad because they cannot do anything. You cannot do business. If like Barry Star said, this is the actual situation on the ground. If you run a big, good provision store, it's either you pay weekly undeclared taxes to people that you don't know, or you are kidnapped for ransoms that it's overbearing. And people cannot visit their relatives. Families have been separated. Members of families that are into the military are perpetually on exile for 8 years and counting. So four homes have been separated and there's no unity at all.
Right. Barrister, so it really begs the question, where do we go from here? This, as we've talked about, the crisis has been going on for 8 years now. It needs to stop. What needs to be done now, and how realistic is that?
Oh, well, that's a difficult one. You know, what needs to stop now is not what needs to be done. I mean, what I think is that both parties should understand or agree to be honest enough also that this will not come through. It's not a military solution. You know, the use of arms is not a panacea. You know, it will not solve the problems. So they would have to make some compromises. They would have to come down from their high horses. The separatists would have to understand that the average Anglophone is not part of what they are doing now. They are not doing it in our name because the atrocity that they have committed against us, they cannot be speaking for us. Government has to understand also that it owes a duty to protect the civilian population in the Southwest and the Northwest region. And they should not consider it to be business as usual. The fact that people are dying in the Southwest and the Northwest, they have to be worried about and also try to tone down their rhetorics, either through their surrogates or some members of government who are inflaming the situation. But equally, try to stretch an olive branch to some of the hardcore separatist leaders through intermediaries to start having a discussion with them and trying to see how they can make some concessions that they have not made, some fundamental concessions that could go a long way, you know, to persuade some of the separatists, not all of them, you know, and for them to understand that we can work within the confine of this country called Cameroon in a way that it will be more equitable. I would recommend amendment of the constitution to have a rotational presidency. The post of vice president should be included. I mean, rotational presidency between the Anglophones and the Francophones. And you know, if there were kind of discussions to go further, like, okay, we can have this special status what we have for the next 10, 15 years, after which we can have a 10-state federation for this number of years. We move to a 2-state federation for this number of years. And if you people are still unsatisfied, we can have a referendum. Some kind of win-win situation where Cameroon wins. Nobody is seen to have lost. I mean, like what happened in South Sudan, okay? They didn't leave one day from the Sudan, and then they had independence. It had phases. And I think this is what also that our separatist friends and brothers should understand, that the way the world is going, nobody supports break away. The people are coming together, you know. The international community is very indifferent. You can tell from what's happening in the country that they are not very supportive of a breakaway state. That would be between one side, Nigeria, who the separatists don't like or they also attack, and Cameroon. So how are you going to be a vibrant entity? I am praying that the separatists and the government should try to find a solution, a win-win solution, taking into consideration the interests of the population, the civilian population. But I will speak to my separatist friends and brothers also that even the government is reluctant to find a solution. They can still continue they're doing what they are doing without putting the civilian population in harm's way, without making life difficult for the civilian population, without kidnapping the civilian population, without terrorizing the civilian population, they should allow people to come and bury their relatives who are there, and also encourage kids to go to school. You cannot have a state where the children are not educated.
Right. Powerful, strong final words there. I'm going to give you the chance, Jean-Marie Ngonsong, to wrap this up in a few seconds.
Yes, Eddie, I want to say that be it an Ambazonian state or federal state or unitary state, it is at the end Cameroon, like Barrister said. I personally, as a journalist for 8 years, I'm tired of reporting cases of people disappearing, murdered cases, and I think that whether the results at the end comes out to be that nothing is changing or what something is changing, transforming from one state to another, it is the people that you will celebrate at the end. Nobody right. will want to have a state tomorrow without people. The killings, the cases of forced disappearance, the misery is too much. I want to say that people should live, and of course to see to the end of tomorrow.
Jean-Marie Ngonsong, DW correspondent in Cameroon, also Barrister Agbogbala, founder and president of the Center for Human Rights and Democracy inside Cameroon. Thank you very much for your time. So how does the situation in Cameroon compare to other countries? This takes us to Nigeria to throw the spotlight on the indigenous people of Biafra, IPOB. Nnamdi Kanu founded IPOB in 2013, while living in London, to force Nigeria's government to allow a referendum on independence. Nigerian authorities considered the IPOB a terrorist group and banned it in 2017. Its leader, Nnamdi Kanu, was arrested and detained in 2021. Now, IPOB says it wants to achieve independence through non-violent means. Joining me now is Prince Emmanuel Kanu, the brother of Nnamdi Kanu, who is the leader of the indigenous people of Biafra, IPOB. Hello, Emmanuel. Thanks for joining me.
Hello, Eddie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, really great to have you on board. So the indigenous people of Biafra, IPOB, is an outlawed group that agitates for the secession of the Igbo ethnic group's homeland that covers part of southeast Nigeria. Is there any similarities between the separatist conflict in Cameroon and that of Nigeria?
No, I'm not sure there is, because in Cameroon it's more of an armed struggle, whereas here in Nigeria is peace, so to say, peaceful struggle. You know, it's not an issue of just identity; it's also an issue of being in control of what we know how to do best, which is managing the life of our people and making sure that as Republicans as we are, that we are free people within Nigeria.
Mm. So as it stands, you don't think your people are free?
We are not free. We are treated like foreigners in Nigeria. Look at the political space in Nigeria. Since after the war, no Igbo man has assumed the position of the president. It has never happened. We are treated more like third class citizens. We are not wanted. If we're not wanted, then allow us be. These are our demands. There is no fairness. There is no justice within the Nigerian setting. So we feel we are not wanted. The only option left is for the authority to allow or permit a referendum so that we can live our life. It's entirely up to our people there and then to decide whether or not we want to be part of Nigeria.
Mm. I believe the challenge is when you say your people, you know, should have their own referendum and all, but that's not the position of the central government, right? The central government sees all of those areas as part of Nigeria, right? With its own, you know, local government or the federal system where there's the federal government. So you clearly are not on the same page. Isn't that the issue?
This is what there has to be some places where we need to agree with the government at the end of the day so that things could be done right. Now, come to think of it, is there any federal presence where we come from in the South? The answer is no. Look at the security apparatus set up by the present administration. Is there any man from Igbo land there? The answer is no.
Okay, so we just had a chat on the situation in Cameroon where, you know, the separatist leaders, you know, picking up arms, and unfortunately, it is the innocent people that are caught in the middle. So how are your policies targeting and affecting the civilian population where you are?
Well, our position has been made clear from the onset. One, we are not an armed struggle group, and we don't pick up fight, neither do we fight. The general understanding of what we do is to make sure everything we do is in line with the laws of this land. Over the years, we have maintained a peaceful movement within Nigeria, even outside Nigeria as well. And like our leader has already made it clear to us that guns and bullets will never solve our problem. All he's asking for is a meaningful and roundtable dialogue. This is why he's currently being detained. Had Nigeria done the needful, or perhaps the previous administration, I don't think we'll be where we are today. No matter how bad it is, there is a need to have dialogue.
Right. And I think that's a very important point, because dialogue is the way forward. The challenge, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that what you want is not what the government is prepared to give. You're trying to have some sort of a separate state managed by you and your own people. And the government doesn't want a breakaway state from Nigeria. Is there any way you can come to some sort of agreement that still maintains Nigeria as a country, as a state, as it is?
Like I've said, there are other options. Do you understand? And these options can only be explored anytime a meaningful discussion is taking place. Now, everybody's amenable, including the leader of the indigenous people of Biafra. He's also amenable.
Prince Emmanuel Kanu, the brother of Nnamdi Kanu, who is the leader of the indigenous people of Biafra, IPOB. Thank you very much for your time. That's it from this edition of Africa Link. Join the conversation on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. Click follow so you don't miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Josie Mahachi. And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening.
DW, made for mind.